Crisis Radio, another big edition this week with the beginnings of an entirely new strategic perspective for 2008, and hold on to your hat in the process. The heart of the matter is right now the attempted seizure of power here in the United States by the Zbigniew Brzezinski faction. The Brzezinski clan. Zbigniew Brzezinski and Mark Brzezinski are the puppet masters of the new synthetic candidate, Obama. And they represent the specter of confrontation and possible war with Russia. The problem here is people have become so accustomed to the neocons and their insanity that they may have forgotten that there are other kinds of insanity in the world, and that sometimes these other kinds of insanity can be worse. To put the question in a nutshell, with the neocons, you get an obsession with Saddam Hussein, with Ahmadinejad, with Syria, with Lebanon, above all with the security needs of Israel and the necessity of destroying the leading Arab and Islamic states. That's, of course, very, very bad, and that's what we've been seeing. Well, with Brzezinski, you get an obsession with the destruction of Russia. You get the attempt to dismember and destroy and partition the Russian Federation, going back to some kind of a situation as you had it in the immediate aftermath of World War I, when you had a Russian civil war going on, and the armies of Denikin and Wrangel and Kolchak and the rest of them, plus intervention forces, including by the U.S. in Murmansk, of all places, and the Czechs and the others, essentially turned much of Eurasia into a battlefield. When you think of one of those czarist aristocratic generals of the White Armies, that's the ego ideal of the Russophobic fanatic, the revanchist, Zbigniew Brzezinski. And Brzezinski goes from strength to strength. We're going to be talking in detail about how he runs Obama, the synthetic profile that has been whipped up and cooked up for the Illinois senator by a cabal of arch-reactionary Eastern Europeans whose main purpose in life is to exact revenge on Russia. There is no more dangerous project. By comparison, the activities of the neocons in the Middle East are horrendous, but not as bad. It's one thing to attack a third or fourth rate military power like Iran. It's another thing to court all-out confrontation with a first-class military power, a superpower, and indeed a superior power in many departments now, increasingly so, like Putin's Russia, led by a person who, compared to the morons running the United States, the nincompoops and imbeciles who run the State Department, the Pentagon, the White House, so forth. This is actually run by a group of intelligent people, people like Putin, Lavrov, and others. So that's what you're getting, and I'm having trouble explaining to people. They say, oh yeah, but Zbigniew Brzezinski was against the Iraq war. Zbigniew Brzezinski doesn't want to attack Iran, and nobody knows this better than I do. It was I who discovered and brought forward the speeches made by Brzezinski approximately 1 year ago this week, when he appeared at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and warned that there was an active scenario in course to embroil the United States in a war. It was going to be a terrorist act in the United States blamed on Iran, or some kind of Gulf of Tonkin incident blamed on Iran. This would then lead to the United States being at war without allies with Syria, with Iraq, with Iran, and with Pakistan. And Brzezinski said he didn't want that. That's great. But then what? What does he want? The basic Brzezinski argument is the Middle East is a sideshow. The Middle East is a waste of time. The importance accorded to the Middle East is a product of the insane obsessions of the neocons, their Israelocentric, Jerusalem-centric outlook on the world. For this, the geopolitician in the tradition of Mackinder and Haushofer, that is to say, Zbigniew Brzezinski and company, has nothing but scorn. It's true, he doesn't want to attack Iran. The idea is, why muck around in the Middle East when you can never get final victory? You can never really get world domination out of the Middle East, no matter what you do, no matter how you win. And, of course, the chances are you won't win. You're going to get bogged down in a very long war. But Brzezinski says, that's a waste of time. That's a sideshow. That's a diversion. The Brzezinski line is, attack Moscow. Crush Moscow. Go for Russia. Once you've crushed the Russian Federation and Moscow and Putin, you rule the world. Everything else falls into place. Why mess around, muck around with the neocon obsessions in the Middle East when world domination awaits you in the steppes of Eastern Europe, the plains of White Russia, of Belarus, Ukraine, and European Russia? That's the Brzezinski perspective. And we've got a lot of hidebound people with blinkers on who can't grasp that the reason Brzezinski is so full of contempt for the neocons and their piddling little wars in the Middle East, as he would put it, is that they're not willing to shoot works for victory. Remember this famous speech by Hitler where he says, you have to go all the way, you have to bet everything, the so-called Vabank speech, double or nothing. That's Brzezinski's same approach. Brzezinski would say, shoot the works for victory. Where can you get it? Go for the strongest military power in the world. Knock them out, and you will rule the world. And that, of course, is Russia. It's not Iran. Iran, of course, do terrible damage and terrible punishment to the U.S. forces in theater. But there's not a whole lot Iran can do to the continental United States. Dear friends, when you look at Russian Federation, look at those Topol M missiles, look at those Bulava submarine-launched ballistic missiles, look at the new class of SLBM, submarine-launched ballistic missiles and submarines coming out of the Russian shipyards. Look at the Russian naval maneuvers in the Atlantic this past week. Bear bombers, blackjack bombers, backfire bombers flying over the North Pole. You get an idea of the new dimensions of insanity, orders of magnitude beyond the neocons that the Brzezinski clique is contemplating. They are mad as hatters. They are mad as March hares. The neocons have had only piddling wars by comparison to what Brzezinski has in store. And this lurks behind the edifying messianic utopian platitudes and rhetoric, the sort of Jimmy Carter style rhetoric that we get from Obama when Obama says it's not enough just to end those existing wars in the Middle East, but to get rid of the mindset that has produced those wars. Well, I guess in a very narrow way, he means the erroneous neocon view that the Middle East is the key to the world. It's not, and in that sense, Brzezinski is correct. It is the world is not dominated by the Middle East by any manner of means. The whole importance of the Middle East used to be that that's the oil for Europe, so if you want to control Europe and then Japan, you've got to control the Middle East. That's really what it comes down to. The Middle East is not something in itself important, but it is a means to control other pieces on the board that are of superior value and superior strategic potential. So that is the debate. Now, this past week, I addressed these themes in a talk to the McClendon Group at the National Press Club here in Washington, D.C. I urge you to go to dc9112.org, dc9112.org. Look down to the page a little bit on the right. The audio tape of that event is something that I find. We'll be back in a minute. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
So, this last Wednesday evening, I was at the National Press Club here in Washington, the Big Flint Group, founded by the well-known, gallant lady, Sarah McLendon, maverick in the Washington Press Corps, one of the very few who asked the questions that the establishment and the controlled corporate media didn't want to get asked. That tradition lives on Wednesday nights at the National Press Club. Look into it, the McLendon Group. And this was the same night that Zbigniew Brzezinski was delivering the keynote address to the winter retreat of the Democratic faction of the House of Representatives in Williamsburg, Virginia. I have not seen any press reports about Zbigniew's speech to the assembled House Democrats, Pelosi, Hoyer, Rombozo, Emanuel, and the rest of them in Williamsburg. We don't know what Zbigniew said. We want to know. Was he talking about coming confrontation with Russia? Was he talking about the need to bring more Chechen terrorists here to Washington and put them on the public payroll with a Rein Fasel scholarship? We have Ilya Smadov, the emissary, the ambassador, the foreign minister of the Chechen terrorists, who's living here in Washington at your expense with a Rein Fasel grant, meaning he has a nice house in Woodley Park Zoo, better than what you can afford in most places. He's got an office at the National Endowment for Democracy, the infamous NED, Project Democracy, the main subversion machine into the block, into the Russian sphere of influence. They're the people who organized the color revolutions and CIA people power coups. He's got a public relations budget, a secretary, a travel budget, all at your expense. Aren't you happy that your tax money is being put to such good use? Next time we see a photograph of a terrorist atrocity by the Chechen butchers in southern Russia and related areas, you can put something up there saying, your tax dollars at work, courtesy of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who did the lobbying, courtesy of Condoleezza Rice, who signs the checks, and courtesy of the Bush administration. So here we're dealing with Brzezinski, a person who is willing to entertain any form of adventure, any kind of lunatic provocation is great, as long as it damages Russia, as long as it creates problems for Moscow. Doesn't matter what it does to the United States. Doesn't matter what kind of blowback or unintended consequences it may bring along. Brzezinski cares nothing for the United States. The entire focus of his monomania is the destruction of Russia and his revenge for the humiliation of his family in 1939 and when he was caught in Canada as a child by the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, which he wants to visit then on Russia today. So all those themes were touched on, again, in this address that I gave at the McLendon Group in the National Press Club. You can see this at dc911truth.org. There's an audio tape. I believe it's going to be supplemented with the slideshow so that you can get an idea of both audio and video. And I believe this has been posted or will be posted at Total 411 Info. There were a number of TV cameras in the room, a number of audio tapings going on. I urge you to take a look at this. The main thing you've got to do is spread the word in all the Super Tuesday states where the voting takes place next Tuesday or concludes next Tuesday. Watch out for Obama. He is a cloak, a mask, a puppet for Zbigniew Brzezinski, Mark Brzezinski, Ian Brzezinski, this charming lady, Mika Brzezinski, that you see every morning on the Morning Joe MSNBC, and you can see how she slants it in favor of Obama. Boy, how she spins for Obama. She's doing pirouettes of spin every morning. She's got her ballet shoes on, I suppose, every morning in favor of Obama. So this is now the great issue. The entire Obama campaign is getting to look more and more like a Jimmy Carter reunion. Who do we have? Paul Adolf Volcker has just endorsed Obama. The Federal Reserve villain, the Federal Reserve monster, who brought you the highest interest rates since the birth of Christ, according to Helmut Schmidt, the Chancellor of Germany at the time. 22% prime rate, and your credit card interest rates went up to that level, and they've never really come down. Paul Adolf Volcker, the man who destroyed the United States industrial economy. He destroyed steel mills in Pittsburgh that Hitler, Stalin, Mao, Mussolini, Tojo would have liked to destroy. Never touched them. But Paul Adolf Volcker destroyed those steel mills with a 22% prime rate and pitched the United States into permanent industrial depression by about 1981, 1982. We have never come out of it. So Volcker has come out. He says he normally doesn't endorse candidates. He's endorsing Obama. We know that Zbigniew made a big endorsement of Obama. Zbigniew Brzezinski, you can see this on the internet. There's a tape. Spread this tape. It's a Bloomberg News. It's on YouTube. It's on Yahoo. You can see it. Zbigniew Brzezinski is talking to Al Hunt, the guy who used to work for the Wall Street Journal, now works for Bloomberg News, and he gives this endorsement where he says, Obama's clearly more effective, and Mrs. Clinton is totally conventional. Conventional, I guess she's just a conventional neocon, and God knows that's bad enough. But there is something worse. Worse than war with Iraq and Iran is war with Russia. Think about it. You better believe it. Ask somebody who knows something about this stuff. They will confirm it. When the Russian offensive gets going, as a German general told me, no eye remains dry. Everybody's weeping when the offensive goes on. So we don't want to be on the receiving end of that because of the obsessions of this lunatic clan of Russia-hating fanatical Brzezinskis. Let me put this all in somewhat different terms now. Maybe this is still too complicated for some. The Trilateral Commission. The Trilateral Commission. Who created it? Two people. David Rockefeller, the money bags. Zbigniew Brzezinski, the first executive director. The guy who came up with the idea. The guy who organized the whole thing. Europe, North America, Japan. Trilateralism. The trilateraloids. You look at Obama. Obama is a Trilateral Commission creation. Again, Volcker, trilateral. Zbigniew, trilateral. And there's more. There's the CFR. Both of them together in the United Front with Obama. Back in a minute.
Listening to GCN, the Genesis Communication Radio Network.
Reporting from Washington, D.C., the Obama campaign is now revealed as a class reunion of the trilateraloids, of the Trilateral Commission over the decades. There is a meeting of the Trilateral Commission coming up here in Washington for some time in April, but don't wait for that. The crisis is now. We look at the advisors. Zbigniew Brzezinski, foreign policy guru, foreign policy dictator, foreign policy handler of Obama, backed up by Mark Brzezinski, his son, animated by the same ferocious, fanatical, lunatic anti-Russian hatred. Public relations, the entire MSNBC, NBC squawk machine media swoon, piloted by Mika Brzezinski, cleverly manipulating dumb guys like Joe Scarborough and other sleazy propagandists. So all of this is going on. It's a trilateral commission side of things. Paul Adolf Volcker comes back, another trilateraloid. And Michelle Obama, the wife of the candidate, important person in her own right, a member of the Council of Foreign Relations. So the Obama campaign is a trilateral commission Council on Foreign Relations front. I hope that's enough for some people to realize that this is worth mobilizing on. This is not good. And naturally, our dear friends, the media whores, the press whores, have never delved into who the advisors are. It's the most obvious thing. Somebody comes out of nowhere. They're a blank slate. What will they do? They make promises. Can you trust the promises? Best way to find out, look at the advisors. Look at the handlers. It's even better than looking at the contributors, because contributors, sometimes a real big corporation will contribute to three or four different candidates so they can be sure that they come out on top. But when you see the advisors, the handlers, the endorsers, the people who loom large in the campaign, that is a clear indication of what is going to happen. And in the case of the Brzezinskis, it's destabilization. The Brzezinski plan. Go to Moscow, ask anybody in the elites, what's the Brzezinski plan? They'll tell you, well, the Brzezinski plan is a plan to break up Russia, European Russia, the Russian Federation itself, in the same way that the neocon fascist madmen from that other faction have broken up Iraq into three parts and would like to break Iran into six or seven parts, into an and into two parts, create a Kurdish state that will carve all the adjoining countries and so forth. But when you start meddling with the Russian Federation, it is different. This is crazy. So we're dealing with a degree of lunacy, a dimension of lunacy that people have forgotten. If you can remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, this is where you're headed. There's nothing comparable to be found in the Middle East, except if the superpowers intervene there. It's really only Russia and only China, to some extent, that can give you this. But going directly at Moscow in the manner of Brzezinski, this is going to be critical. Our listeners in Europe, remember, the entire Brzezinski approach is to refurbish the image of American imperialism, U.S.-British world domination, right? The Anglo-American mad dog imperialists that you've seen at work in the Middle East. They can't do it without European troops, European logistics, above all that NATO logistics base, the German railways, the Italian ports, the Italian and Turkish airfields and all the rest of it. You can't do any of this. And of course, when we say NATO now includes the Baltics, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, these small, equally revanchist countries, Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary. It may be expanded to include many Balkan states, Romania, Bulgaria, Slovakia, and you will even be expected to fight and die for the eastern border of Ukraine under a regime of lunatic kleptocrats, Yushchenko and Timoshenko, the ice princess, right, Yulia, the greatest kleptocrat of Eastern Europe, and even Georgia, the eastern border of Georgia, far away at the other end of the Black Sea, beyond Samarkand, you will find NATO, and therefore a commitment of you or your children here in the United States to fight and die for a tribe of kleptocrats and revanchist lunatics. And unfortunately, this whole NATO expansion has come in through the back door in the 1990s when everybody's attention was riveted on Iraq and the other conflicts that the neocons had been stirring up. Mark Brzezinski under Clinton and Ian Brzezinski now under Bush were busily working on that. So now let's look at the focus. Where does this end up? We are now headed, we're actually in a combination dynamic with Russia just as a result of the ascendancy of Obama. Naturally, Mrs. Clinton is far from free of these influences. If we look at Mrs. Clinton's entourage, we will find Richard Holbrooke and General Wesley Clark. And these are the two mad bombers of Serbia in the spring of 1999. This is where the hatred of the United States in the world actually began, because by bombing Serbia, you made enemies out of Russia and China. China, by bombing their embassy in Belgrade, remember, a deliberate provocation, the big cheerleader for the attack on Serbia, this act of unspeakable historical vandalism, the destruction of the bridges over the Danube, especially the key bridge at Novi Sad, which was bombed and then left down for years, paralyzing traffic on the most important commercial artery in Europe. That was done by Holbrooke, by General Wesley Clark. Holbrooke, a likely Secretary of State for Hillary. General Wesley Clark, a likely Vice Presidential candidate. Madeleine Albright, Madame Corbell Albright, coming from Prague, another member of this clique, Eastern European revanchists. And of course, it was Madeleine Albright's father, Professor Corbell, who schooled Condoleezza Rice in the fine arts of Russophobia, provocation, revanchism, and reaction. So this is a very bad deal. The only thing I can say, you can distinguish that Brzezinski is demonstrably more insane, more committed to a forward policy of provocation and confrontation than these Hillary Clinton people. And that's, I'm afraid, the only comfort I can offer, and that's not much. But the thing is, that stuff is fairly widely known, or it can be known relatively easily. The big problem you have right now is the media swoon, the media free ride. Think of the Democratic debate last night. Obama's organized crime backer, Tony Resco, has now been thrown in jail. His friend, his contributor, is a little bit like the Kenneth Lay. As Kenneth Lay is to George Bush, or was, so Tony Resco is to Obama. So his main man gets thrown in the clink. Does anybody ask Obama, what's with your friend Tony Resco? Do you plan to visit him in jail? Do you plan to send him a file? What are you going to do? Barack, not a word. Free ride from the controlled corporate media, and it's important for people to actually see all this. Now, let's look at the confrontation. The immediate focus of the confrontation is Sunday. That is to say, by the time you hear this, tomorrow, on Sunday, February 3rd, we will have nationwide parliamentary elections in Serbia. That is to say, the formally speaking, the Republic of Serbia and Montenegro. That is rump Yugoslavia, what's left of Yugoslavia around Belgrade with Montenegro thrown in. This has this province, right? It's called Kosovo province, with large Indian minority. And NATO, ever since 1998-99, with the lunatic Madeleine Albright, has been pushing for independence of Kosovo under the leadership of the KLA. Hey, once again, it's not just Ilyas Akhmadov, not just one kind of terrorist in the Brzezinski faction. We've also got the KLA, gun runners, drug runners, and terrorists. NATO wants to make them the government in Pristina, the capital of this new tiny principality of Kosovo. Back in a minute.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
This radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, in Washington, D.C. So, starting Sunday, February 3rd, tomorrow, quite possibly, we get the beginning of a Kosovo crisis. See, this, the whole thing is shifting. I think right now Europe is hotter than the Gulf. The Gulf is hot. Don't get me wrong. The Gulf is a theater of endless provocations, especially because the Israelis themselves may be alarmed at what is going on here. They may decide they want to preempt some of the things I'm telling you about. But the situation in Eastern Europe is getting hotter faster than any place else in the world. The Serbian national elections, and the question is the presidency. We have two contenders, Tomislav Nikolic of the Serbian radical parties, the controlled corporate media hounds have not even told you this is coming up. Serbian presidential candidate Tomislav Nikolic of the radical party, considered to be an ultra-nationalist. This just means that he's pro-Moscow, anti-NATO, and whatever else his characteristics are, this is for internal consumption. But the main thing is, he's going to be pro-Putin, anti-NATO. The incumbent president, Boris Tadic, is the resident NATO and European Union puppet, and therefore Brzezinski's candidate, except it's more complicated, because the idea is to use this as a provocation and a gambit. The idea is that if Nikolic wins the elections, you will have the Kosovo leadership, meaning the KLA, gun runners, drug runners, and terrorists, including Zawahiri's cousin, Al-Qaeda, and of course Al-Qaeda is what I've always said, it's an arm of the CIA and MI6, they will declare independence. Well, that is that a tempest in a teapot? Far from it. Russia, on January 28th, we have the official Russian Kosovo negotiator, the Russian Foreign Ministry, Alexander Botsan-Karchenko. Botsan-Karchenko warns that if you have Kosovo independence, you're liable to have a civil war in that province. The Serbian part of the province, and there's a significant Serbian part, does not want to go into independence under KLA Albanian leadership, and therefore there'll be some fighting. He says this will lead to a humanitarian catastrophe in that province. And he also talks about countermeasures, unidentified countermeasures coming from the side of Moscow. Alexander Botsan-Karchenko says, yes, Russia's foreign ministry has prepared a whole host of steps and measures. These accord fully with our position on the independence of Kosovo. The Russian position is independence is fine as long as it's mutually negotiated by the Serbian government in Belgrade with the Kosovo leadership, and they are pretty much what I said. The center of gravity is this KLA operation. Now, what could this be? Botsan-Karchenko points out that if you have Kosovo independence, the result of the unilateral recognition of independence would, first of all, be recognition by NATO, the U.S., NATO, the European Union, the British, would be a situation close to a humanitarian catastrophe. But it would also destabilize the Balkans all over the place and fuel separatism, all over Europe and the former Soviet Union, including the breakaway regions in the Caucasus supported by Russia. In other words, there are parts of Georgia over there at the edge of the Black Sea that don't want to be under Georgia anymore. They want to go back to Moscow, and it's clear to everybody that if Kosovo declares independence, those breakaway regions of Georgia will also declare independence. That independence will be recognized by Russia. So we will have essentially a diplomatic war going on. Now, this thing about separatism, this is absolutely the key to Brzezinski's strategy. The book which underlies the entire Obama campaign is Brzezinski's latest book, Second Chance. And in this he says, there is a worldwide political upheaval going on. The goal of it is dignity. Not economic development, not national independence, but this vague platitude of dignity. What does he mean by that? Essentially what he means that every particularist, ethnic, parochial, local difference that you have gives you a right to separate, to become an independent country. The idea is to take the world back to the crazy quilt map of the Holy Roman Empire, that is Central Europe in 1600, where, you know, every two or three miles, it was a new country. So get them balkanized, get them broken up, carved, cut into pieces, to the point where everybody is so small and so impotent and so squabbling that not one of them can stand up to J.P. Morgan Chase, Exxon Mobil, Halliburton, Blackwater, and all the rest of it. That's pretty much the imperialist playbook. We see that with Bernard Lewis in the Middle East and similar plans reaching into Pakistan. But now they want to do it to Russia. This is, again, the heart of the Brzezinski project, is to say, we have smashed the Warsaw Pact in the late 80s. Some years after that, the Soviet Union was successfully smashed. Now the task is to smash Russia, to detach all the external elements of the Russian Federation, and to dismember European Russia itself with color revolutions. Now, speaking of color revolutions, if the pro-Moscow candidate, Nikolic, is seen to be winning in Belgrade, in Serbia, this coming Sunday, February 3rd, it's very likely that the Zbigniew Brzezinski, Mark Brzezinski machine, in other words, the Obama campaign, will attempt to do a color revolution in Belgrade, or better yet, in Pristina. And again, they'll simply declare independence. They will try to have a coup in Serbia as a whole, if they can, I believe. That might be to try to get the Russians to intervene more directly. But the idea is to use this crisis to foment a general confrontation in Eastern Europe, and therefore between the superpowers, because Russia is a superpower, and don't let anybody kid you about that. Now, what might these countermeasures be? Well, it's hard to tell, but one obvious countermeasure is, suppose Russia cuts off gas deliveries to Europe, or to those countries in Europe that support the independence on a unilateral basis of Kosovo. What Brzezinski wants to do with this, in addition to spreading this bacillus of separatism and secessionism and dignity, meaning that's by secessionism and by sort of identity politics, you get dignity. We've seen a bout of that with Brzezinski's man Obama leading the way now. Identity politics, right? Who's a black? Who's a woman? Who's a Latino? All the rest of this. Wonderful ways to divide. But in Eastern Europe, they want to do it with dignity, therefore secessionism and separatism. But if you want to get Western Europe, especially, fully on the side of a new Brzezinski-Obama regime, you've got to somehow get conflict with Moscow going. And one way to do that is to try to provoke Russia to the point where energy supplies might be cut off, or better yet, get a diplomatic crisis and then have your various agents provocateurs take some steps to cut off these pipelines or something of the sort. So we're looking at that. Slightly longer term time perspective, we're looking at the installation of U.S. anti-ballistic missiles into Poland and radars into the Czech Republic. The Russian general staff some weeks ago said that if you have these U.S. ABM missile batteries in Poland, if one of those is fired, that will be indistinguishable from an IRBM launch, an intermediate-range ballistic missile launch, a Pershing or something of this sort, out of Poland towards Moscow, and that it may be necessary for the Russian Federation to undertake a retaliatory strike with nuclear weapons in the face of that. So don't put those missiles there. You're putting World War III on a hair trigger, says the Russian General Staff. Crisis Radio for our second hour. We're discussing the lunatic Zbigniew Brzezinski clan machine that is the heart and the brain of the Obama synthetic puppet candidacy, and this brings with it the danger of all-out confrontation with Russia sooner rather than later, and it is indispensable for people. It's time to break out of the mindset induced by the neocon, certainly, that the Middle East is the only source of strategic threat. Right now, Eastern Europe is racing to catch up and overtake the Middle East, and the inherent strategic potential of Eastern Europe means that crises in that area, the Ukraine, Belarus, Poland, Germany area, are infinitely more explosive in their thermonuclear potential, in particular, because this is where the superpowers touch with the European Union, of course, as their quite likely battlefield, and NATO getting into the mix. So it is time now to rethink the strategic map, the mental world of the neocons, of course, centering around Israel and the Middle East. But the Brzezinski map, which is now the ascendant one, and again, he was the keynote speaker at the retreat of the Democratic House of Representatives members in Williamsburg, Virginia, this past Wednesday night, is confrontation with Russia, trying to play China against Russia in the Far East, and trying to use these color revolutions, CIA power coups, and various gambits to court all-out confrontation. And one that you have to watch most immediately is Kosovo independence. Kosovo independence is now reported to be coming, if not immediately on the 3rd of February, Sunday, tomorrow for many of you, then sometime during February or into March of 2008, there will be unilateral independence to Kosovo, a breakaway province. This violates the norms of the CSCE, the European Security Treaty, Helsinki, 1975, that preserves all borders as final. It violates that, and sets up a confrontation, because whatever is done to Serbia is done to Russia. If you need proof of that, go back and look. That happens to be how World War One started, was Russia coming in on the side of Serbia, and believe me, this is not worth doing. And then, of course, the installation of these missiles. Poland, under this new puppet leader, Tusk, another puppet of Brzezinski, is playing the NATO card. Belarus, interestingly, is going with the Russian Federation. Kaliningrad, this area, Königsberg, old East Prussia, has been under Soviet and Russian administration. The commander there says that Kaliningrad is revamping its positions there in the corner of the Baltic in order to deal with the likely installation of the U.S. missiles into Poland. And again, this past week we've had huge Russian naval exercises in the North Atlantic with the aircraft carrier Admiral Kuznetsov and the guided missile cruiser Moskva leading the way. This is a first-rate naval power. People who have gotten used to thinking of war as a one-way street, dealing with relatively backward powers like Iraq or indeed Iran, have no idea what is in the Russian arsenal. The Topol-M intercontinental ballistic missile, the most advanced in the world, better than anything the U.S. has, able to defeat anti-ballistic missile defenses, and the Bulava submarine-launched ballistic missile. This is now heavy stuff. This is a whole new dimension. And now let's look at the strategic stuff itself. You heard it already here some weeks ago, but on the basically around the 19th of January, we have General Yuri Baluyevsky, Russian Chief of the General Staff. So General Baluyevsky of the Russian General Staff warns that nuclear weapons may be unavoidable if some of these Brzezinski plans, in effect, turn out to be reality. He says the following, quote, "We are not going to attack anyone, but we want all our partners to realize that Russia will use armed force to defend its own and its allies' sovereignty and territorial integrity. it may resort to a preemptive nuclear strike in cases specified by its doctrine. And what they're saying is under the 2000 Russian doctrine, Russia was ready to use nuclear weapons only in retaliation against a nuclear attack. But now we're told that nuclear weapons may be used in response to a large-scale conventional aggression in a situation which is critical for the national security of the Russian Federation and its allies. And again, it's no coincidence that this statement is being made on the 19th of January as we head towards confrontation in Kosovo, confrontation with these missiles in Poland, and a general offensive of the Brzezinski machine. In a certain way, this statement by Baluyevsky, I would interpret as a response to the Obama campaign, to the idea that madman Zbigniew Brzezinski may get his hands on the nuclear button once again. God help us if this turns out to be the case. Now, on the other side, a little bit later, I have an article here by my friend Leonid Ivashov, who is a former head of the Russian General Staff, and he points to a statement by General John Chalikashvili, General Peter Inch of Britain, Klaus Naumann of the Bundeswehr of Germany, Jacques Lanskade, Admiral of France, and Henk van den Bremen of the Netherlands, all saying that it's time for NATO to change its doctrine. Remember, the U.S. has already changed it, but NATO, I believe, has not so far, to the direction of first use of nuclear weapons, not just for deterrence, but preventive, preemptive use of nuclear weapons. The title of this article by Ivashov is Preparations of the United States for Nuclear War Against Iran. And the thesis of this article is this is directed immediately against Iran, but of course, as Ivashov well knows, it can also be directed against others. I would urge you to go back to the summer of 2005 when Bush was rattling on about preventive war. Putin simply said, you know, if you keep talking about preventive war, you find that preventive war is nobody's monopoly. More than two can play that game. So the neocon fascist madmen have essentially created a situation where the Brzezinski coup, the color revolution coup here inside the United States, which is ongoing, was possible. And indeed, some of our well-meaning friends cannot understand that there's something worse than confrontation in the Middle East. It is confrontation in Eastern Europe. And the main threat has shifted over the past couple of months with the emergence of the Brzezinski machine running a presidential candidate, Obama, who has everybody fooled. The media, of course, have not done their work. They have not pointed to this Brzezinski machine and reminded us of the horrors of the Carter administration. Remember, everything done in the Gulf so far, the first Gulf War, the Iraq War, the confrontation attempted with Iran, all of that is done under the aegis of what? Of the Carter Doctrine of 1980. Who wrote it? Brzezinski. It says the United States will dominate the Persian Gulf against all comers, especially the Soviets, or today, the Russians. So, in a sense, it is Brzezinski who has created the strategic framework in which the smaller-scale thinkers, the neocon fascist madmen, have been operating. It is a slightly different school. It is time to change gears mentally and realize that the threats are multiplying and that all the slogans that have been good for the last two or three years now have to be adjusted for confrontation in Eastern Europe, where everything is immediately at stake. Back in a minute.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Crisis Radio here on Genesis Communications Network. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, in Washington, D.C. So, now beyond the immediate focus of the Kosovo crisis, we have the question of the installation of these anti-ballistic missiles in Poland and a corresponding radar, phased array, big radar into the Czech Republic. What is the issue here? Well, you may remember back in the spring of 2006, in the pages of Foreign Affairs magazine, published by the Council on Foreign Relations, of which Michelle Obama is a proud member, we had these two professors, Lieber and Press, talking about the possibility of U.S. nuclear primacy. That is to say, as they put it, that the U.S. was very close, in their opinion, to being able to conduct a first strike nuclear sneak attack and wipe out the nuclear potential of Russia and China, and that this would leave those two countries virtually defenseless vis-a-vis the U.S. nuclear arsenal. And I pointed out at the time, boy, that is a lunatic argument. And one obvious objection is the Dr. Strangelove one. What if they have the doomsday machine? And if you go back, as I did, you'll find in the 1990s, it turned out that during much of the Cold War, there was a Soviet doomsday machine. There was a mechanism in place to fire a strategic missile over the entire length of the Soviet Union across the 11 or 12 time zones and use that radio signal from that missile to fire off the ICBMs out of their hardened silos. So you have to figure that anybody who once had a doomsday machine, automatic nuclear retaliatory launch mechanism, may still have it, but just beyond that, you know, there's this area of tactical and short range and medium range nuclear forces. Here, the Russians are superior in a crushing form, so you are not going to catch this power flat footed with a first strike in the way that the Brzezinski clique may think that they can as we get into this crisis. So, again, behind the edifying face of Obama with his platitudes and his utopian fantasies of world renovation and world reform, the abolition of partisanship, the new civility, all the stuff that appears, that appeals to the schli and brie set of snobbish, complacent, Malthusian, neo-Luddite voters. Behind all that lurks Dr. Strangelove, worse than Dr. Strangelove by now, is Zbigniew Brzezinski and that clique. So those missiles are headed over towards Poland. And again, the Russian general staff says that if you put those in there, if you shoot them off, you're shooting at something coming from Iran. But it's going to have to be interpreted by Russia as a strike against Russia, because you're sending a missile right over their territory. The trajectory of a missile shot Moscow is going to be indistinguishable from one shot to try to bring down one of these Iranian missiles, which, again, don't even exist at the present time. So all of this has got to get massive attention. Wake up to this stuff. This is the big stuff. As you can see here, everything is at stake. This is not war as a one-way street. This is war, as Ivashov writes. He calls this nuclear Armageddon. He writes at the end of this essay on the Shalikashvili and company and Nauman and Ripper 3 making this statement about switching the NATO doctrine. He writes that the world stands at the brink of nuclear Armageddon. This must be taken seriously. And it's very interesting, as we'll talk about in the next segment. Ivashov says that one of the reasons, one of the things that's fueling this is the collapse of the U.S. dollar. And that's a thesis that you've heard here. I think any seasoned observer of the world would say a system of finance oligarchy like the Anglo-American one is going to respond with hysteria and new levels of insanity when they see their banking system racked by banking panic, and above all, when they see their world reserve currency going into the final death agony of the dollar, the tailspin of the dollar. The dollar is now approaching 1.5 U.S. dollars to a euro. It's basically close to an all-time low right now today, Friday, the 1st of February. So hold on to your hat on that. Couple of other things. The Russian General Staff had declared back in December, saying, look, don't tell us these stories. We know that these missiles are not directed against Iran. Iran has nothing that would fill the bill. In other words, there are no Iranian missiles that could be launched along this trajectory. And, of course, they don't have such missiles. And even if they did, they wouldn't be going over Poland. So, and they wouldn't be susceptible to getting picked up by a radar in the Czech Republic. So the only conceivable purpose of this deployment of ABM missiles into Poland is to facilitate a U.S. first strike sneak attack now against Russia, in line with the Lieber and Press article back in Foreign Affairs in March, April of 2006, which I called much attention to at the time. Again, we have, if you, I think I would just recommend to people, if you want to keep up with this stuff and see what the strategic reality is, take a look at RIA Novosti in English. RIA Novosti news agency, it's well presented, it's accessible, you can see it all right there. Articles are basically brief, concise, to the point. You get the idea very quickly. Start reading RIA Novosti and use that to begin reshaping your strategic outlook so that you're not just looking at what's going on with the Shiites and the Kurds and the rest. Important as all that undoubtedly remains, we've now got a new front opening up, which is inherently more apocalyptic for the world simply because of the incomparably greater strategic potential that is at stake. A couple of more words about Obama. For those of you who consider it important to get the Republican bandits out of the White House, and I think that's a perfectly understandable and laudable goal, you have to think about electability. Well, electability, look at the Larry Sinclair egg. Larry Sinclair, L-A-R-R-Y-S-I-N-C-L-A-I-R. Google that with Obama, you can see things that make hairs stand up. Republicans will use that to show Obama had a built-in electability.
You're listening to GCN, the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Back to World Crisis Radio. I'm told that the second caller at today's Ed Schultz show on many Air America radio stations brought up this question of the Brzezinski clan of fanatic Russia haters running the puppet Obama candidacy and maintaining Ilya Akhmadov, envoy of the Chechen terrorists in Washington, D.C., at taxpayer expense. You pay for the ambassador of the Chechen terror organization. Remember, those are the people who killed 400 people at a school in Beslan, in a nearby part of the Southern Russian Federation back in September 2004. 150 people at a hospital in Southern Russia back in 1995. 300 to 400 people when the Chechens went to work blowing up apartment houses in Moscow. And don't believe the story that Putin did this. This is laughable. This is a kind of a dialectic cover-up put out by NATO intelligence and the Chechen machine, probably authored by Ilyas Akhmadov himself. So these Chechen terrorists, and there's no other word for it, right? They're basically the death toll caused by these things is getting up, it's well above 1,000. And again, special preference for the defenseless, for women and children, something that it's a very special aspect when you attack a hospital and above all a school where you have women and children primarily. That seems to be the signature of the late Bastayev and the late Maskhadov. But don't worry, because their representative lives on in Washington. He's living high on the hog at your expense with U.S. taxpayer dollars. And again, we want to know, would a President Obama bring more Chechen terrorist representatives? Would we have KLA terrorist representatives coming to Washington to take part in the Brzezinski strategy? Because that's how the puppet organization Al-Qaeda got going. It was Brzezinski who basically masterminded the overthrow of the Shah of Iran, but then brought in, above all, Khomeini. It was not enough to have a military coup or a Bakhtiar government or any other kind of government. It had to be the British agent Khomeini to be brought in and put in command, because Zbigniew Brzezinski was preaching that Islamic fundamentalism was the main bulwark against Soviet communism, and that had to radiate out from Iran into Afghanistan, where Brzezinski, in that famous, infamous Nouvelle Observateur interview published about 10 years ago, boasted that he had sent his subversion teams into Afghanistan in June, July, 1979, sorry, 6 to 8 months before the Soviet invasion. So it was he who lured the Soviets, provoked them in, got them bogged down in an equivalent of Vietnam. So that is the adventurer who is behind the Obama campaign. Now, concerning the financial situation, as Ivar Shoff reminds us, it is the collapse of the dollar that leads us to, basically at this point, the dollar is going down so fast, it cannot be excluded that some kind of confrontation will have to be whipped up in the next 4 to 6 weeks, maybe, in order to prevent the collapse of the dollar. It's now perfectly possible. They need to refresh this myth that if you want to dump the dollar, you're a terrorist. And that has been used assiduously over the years. That's now getting a little old. Something new may have to happen to save the dollar. So watch that dollar. When the dollar crosses 1.5 and begins to head for 1.6 euros or dollars per euro, then hold on to your hat. But let's look at what has now happened in the past week. In the last 2 weeks, actually in a period of 8 days, we have had an unexampled series of measures by the Federal Reserve. First of all, the surprise cut on the day after Martin Luther King, on the Tuesday after the Martin Luther King Monday holiday, the cut in the federal funds rate of 0.75%, 75 basis points, as the finance oligarchs like to say. And that has now been followed on the 30th, on Wednesday, by a cut of another 0.5%. So we now got the unexampled haste of the Federal Reserve to cut the federal funds rate, that is the prevalent interbank lending rate of the U.S. banking system, for loans that these banks have to have in order to reach their legally mandated reserve requirements every evening. That has now been cut by 1.25% in 8 days. I don't think there's anything like it, at least in recent history, and maybe this is the most precipitous drop ever. This certainly signals a big panic. Panic, maybe it's too much to say. It may be a panic that is perfectly justified in view of the information that they have inside the Federal Reserve about how a grave the crisis. ...1,000 jobs wiped out in construction, 20 to 30,000 jobs wiped out in manufacturing, that is real production, and this has been made up by health care and by government and a few other things, but this is now a grim scene. But don't worry too much, because ExxonMobil has announced that they've got a $10 billion profit for the last quarter of 2007, and the ExxonMobil stockholders can be glad because $40 billion of profits have come in. Now, I would say it's time to slap them with a retroactive excess profits tax, windfall profits. It's time for ExxonMobil to part with some of that ill-gotten money. This situation now is extremely grim, and we got to look at these monoline insurance companies. Oh, my heavens, Ambac and NBIA. You'll remember that there was a story that these were going to be bailed out by a consortium of banks. These are the little companies that you don't hear of. They're actually very big in money terms. Their job is to insure bonds, including junk bonds, and then they got into this business of credit default swaps. We're told that there are $420 trillion of credit default swaps in this rotten system. That would be part of the approximately $1 quadrillion of derivatives outstanding in the system. And we were told that the New York State insurance commissioner, insurance regulator, was trying to promote the existence of a cartel of banks to come forward with $5 to $20 billion in order to bail out Ambac and MBIA. And at the time, I said, look, this is yet another Frankenfund story. This is simply another project of mutual self-help in the private sector. This is exactly the kind of stuff that Herbert Hoover loved. He had one of these things every couple of months. Well, here so far in this depression, we have had the Frankenfund fiasco, $100 billion that was supposed to be raised in order to bail out certain asset-backed commercial paper companies, didn't work, and there won't be any bailout for Ambac or MBIA. So the depression rolls on, and the financial panic rolls on, and above all, the death agony of the dollar rolls on. Back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Final segment of our program, which a lot of you are going to hear on Groundhog Day, Candlemas in the old calendar. And, let's just look for a second at the presidential campaign situation. We've had Edwards dropping out, a strange and disconcerting event, I would say. Edwards, in many ways, the most interesting candidate in the current election, certainly the most interesting on the Democratic side, dropping out just a couple of days before Super Tuesday, when most of the money investment for Super Tuesday had already been made. One wonders why it would not have been possible for Edwards to stay in the race at least through Tuesday, February 5th. To give a larger cross-section of the country a chance to vote. Notice, so far we have not heard from any electoral vote megastates. We've had the Iowa caucuses. We've had the New Hampshire primary. We have had the Michigan primary. There's a mega state, but for the Republicans, it was, but for the Democrats, not contested. After that, we've had South Carolina, which has always been a very peculiar state, let's say, always atypical in many, many ways. And then Florida, which once again for the Democrats was not a contested primary. And Edwards had talked about the fact that this meant that really only four, five, or six states had voted, and that we had 44 or 45 left to go. Now, with Super Tuesday, you would have had California, New York, Illinois, Georgia, some big, important states. It seems to me that it would have been advisable to remain in the fray with political content and programmatic ideas through the 5th of February. I regret very much that Edwards either dropped out or was forced out at this point. Nobody knows what the story is. There were stories about his wife's health, which is known to be bad, but in this brutal and hypocritical business of politics in the United States, nobody can really know what kind of threats or pressures were exercised behind the scene. What we do know is that Edwards has contributed something of value. Again, whatever you think of him, and quite independently of whether any of these promises were even sincerely met, he has succeeded in radicalizing the entire presidential contest, not just the Democrats, but the Republicans too. And that is this overriding question: when you have a world economic depression, a breakdown crisis, banking panic, and the rest, you need economic populism, strong economic populism. He injected it, first of all, with the health care plan, the first one of the current campaign cycle in January 2007, aiming at universal health care coverage, allowing the private sector and Medicare for All to coexist, with the possibility that as time went on, people chose to go in that direction, the single-payer Medicare for All might well have emerged. The system could have evolved towards a Medicare for All single-payer plan. This was then immediately copied by Hillary Clinton. So Hillary Clinton now has this Edwards plan. Secondly, Edwards was the first to come forward with a stimulus package. Again, I wouldn't call these things stimulus packages. They are really emergency relief for people who need money for food, rent, and fuel. And that is why the Senate would be very well advised to put food stamp funding and, above all, jobless benefits, an extra 26 weeks of unemployment insurance into that stimulus. So again, it's not a stimulus, it's simply emergency depression relief for people who have been hard hit by the finance oligarchs and their machinations. And again, for you libertarians, I realize this is a hard idea, but the idea is use the federal government to crush the monopolistic oligopolies, the J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Halliburton, and Exxon Mobils of the world, and redress the balance in favor of the average person. The free market will never do it. There is no free market. There never will be a free market again in world history, if there ever was one, under current conditions. So Edwards had recognized that. Edwards had actually gone the farthest, and this is now highlighted in an article that will appear in The Nation magazine, February 11th issue, which I believe is the one that's already out now, or will be out in a couple of days. Edwards had actually proposed a compulsory federal ban on foreclosures of homes, at least, for 1 year. Now, that, I think, is a remarkable step in the right direction. That is the most advanced we've seen from any presidential candidate. We do have, of course, Lori Dobson running for the Senate in Maine on an independent ticket, who, as of about October, was calling for a five-year compulsory freeze on mortgage foreclosures. And I would point out, if you go back and look at my essay, Helicopter Ben Unleashes Dollar Hyperinflation, from about the 12th of August of last year, as this crisis was beginning, you'll see the key operative point there is freeze all foreclosures on homes, on farms, public utilities, infrastructure, taxi companies, trucking companies, transportation, ferries, railroads, airlines, no foreclosures, shipping lines, and hospitals if you want to live. So if you want a home, and a hospital and electricity and transportation, freeze all closures for 5 years or the duration of the entire crisis. Of course, for people, for homes, it's for people who are living in the homes. If that's your primary residence, it's untouchable. If you've got 100 of them that you're flipping, then it looks different. That does not extend protection in that direction. So in every department, Edwards had been the most radical populist. And I guess the argument against him was, look at his voting record. He voted for the bankruptcy reform bill, this interest gouging monstrosity, at least the first version back in the early aughties. Well, again, that doesn't matter so much now. What you can say is whatever his real intentions were, just by coming out with those economic populist measures, he was able to push the entire contest toward more rapid radicalization. Huckabee was one of the first ones who noticed this. Now, Huckabee had a hard time because he's saddled with this monstrous 35% national sales tax that he calls the fair tax, which would be the greatest downward, the greatest upward distribution of money and the greatest downward distribution of the tax burden that we've ever seen in recent history. So he had to somehow give himself left cover with some populism. So he began talking about Walmart Republicans rebelling against Wall Street Republicans and Sam's Club Republicans rebelling against the Country Club Republicans. But then, of course, it was really Hillary and Obama, for their own demagogic reasons, who immediately had to start copying everything that Edwards did. And in departure, he demanded that they continue to talk about poverty. The only one who talked about poverty was Edwards. Not ideology, not pie-in-the-sky plans for radical reform of human nature or anything of the sort, and not ideological points of the libertarian type, but rather real economic populist measures designed to address the needs of the poor, the lower, and the middle, the lower middle and the middle. So that is unfortunate that this system is incapable of allowing a candidacy like that of Edwards to go on. And now, I'm afraid, our situation is very grim. And you can hear from today's broadcast, I'm trying to point to the Obama as the greatest danger, because Zbigniew Brzezinski is crazier than anybody else on the scene. Again, please go and look, go and listen to that audio tape of my talk at the National Press Club on Wednesday night. That's available at DC 911 Truth, and I believe shortly at total411.info. And finally, remember, surviving the cataclysm is coming. Surviving the cataclysm will have a new edition coming out soon. If you're interested in that, please send an email to info@progressivepress.com. INFO, info@progressivepress.com. And you'll be informed when surviving the cataclysm hits the streets. Next week on Full Crisis Radio, much closer weekend, much, 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 much,